Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. I hope we're alive. That means we're still breathing. This is the Rose Colombo. And welcome to Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. just for you, bringing you top stories, hot stories, breaking news, whenever we possibly can. We're on every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in the USA. Blog Talk Radio online worldwide podcast, so anyone in the world can listen, and anyone in the world is welcome to listen, because we are the United States of America, and so far we've been able to push back and maintain freedom of speech, whether it's on social media. So far, there's a big push to stop and control us, and also probably around the world. And without freedom of speech, we are what I call and coined back in the early 90s, SOD, S-O-D, suppressed, oppressed, and depressed, like in many third world nations who are trying to escape their countries and come to the USA. We already have probably 22 to 30 million. The government lies about the numbers. They tell us there's 12 million, but they've been saying that for 2 decades. So you know those numbers have doubled and tripled since that time, because when Obama was in office, he migrated tens of thousands from the Middle East secretly, flying them in at night and then tying the hands of Border Patrol and Sheriffs and ICE and bypassing TSA by flying them in secretly at night and then allowing them to walk across our borders. So we have millions of unidentified people in our country from every country you can think about. Now they're coming from Bangladesh, Africa, Somali. I mean, I don't know how they think that 330 million Americans, and not everyone can pay taxes, because some Americans are disabled, they're veterans who were injured on the battlefield fighting for our freedom and our sovereignty that we're not seeing upheld by the United States Congress for at least a decade now, longer than that, but more seriously in the past decade. Millions of people continue to cross over our borders, remain on expired visas, and have anchor babies. All these people who have lots and lots of children grow up, and they have lots and lots of children. And that means generations of welfare recipients on the backs of the existing Americans who are still alive and those who have passed away, as well as future generations who are paying for the national debt that has been racked up by the federal government. So it is a huge problem, serious problem for the middle class, because if this doesn't come to a big halt soon and people aren't detained and deported and forced to go through ports of entry, because we have tens of thousands of people who are gathering now in different countries together and continuing to march towards our borders and those of Mexico as well. And you can only feed so many people with your tax dollars, right? There's no constitutional law that says we are required to feed millions of illegals in our country, but there is a law that says they must be here legally. I don't know how the Congress on either side of the aisle got that wrong. But there is some news that Brazil's president is going to work very, very hard to end gender brainwashing of children in their schools in Brazil. I think that this is going to start happening in America and in other civilized nations. Also, I just want to mention that this transgender movement, along with same-sex movement and mandated taxpayer-funded abortions, requiring Americans to pick up the tab for children they're not responsible for, who choose to have a baby pro-choice and aborted on the abortion table at taxpayers' expense by the millions, is a depopulation program. They're all depopulation programs. They're for population control. So we are depopulating the natural-born Americans by the last count, statistically, was up to 70 million, but that only counts the ones they know about. So we are short 70 million natural-born Americans today because of mandated taxpayer-funded abortions, pro-choice, Roe versus Wade, and the men and women in black in the Supreme Court who approve of that, along with the Congress. So there you go. So not only are we required to pay for the abortions in America and all the illegals and the anchor babies and the dreamers, we are also required, did you know, because Obama signed an executive order in January of 2009, the Global Poverty Act, I think it's changed to the New Millennium Development Act, under the United Nations Agenda 21, to requiring Americans to pay for abortions worldwide in third world countries who are born to poor third world country parents. Can you believe this? I mean, it's not funny, but it's absolutely insanity. And we're required, the American taxpayers pay for worldwide mandated taxpayer-funded abortions to depopulate the undesirables, according to those who call themselves the wealthy elite. And they have written this Global Poverty Act or the New Millennium Development Act with justification by stating that they are reducing poverty in the world. And I've read that, and it's the biggest hoax ever played on the masses within the world. So between the mandated taxpayer-funded worldwide abortions, the illegals, the dreamers, the anchor babies, and killing off the natural-born Americans in the USA at taxpayers' expense as well, against the will of many, many moral people, not even involving religion, just moral people, we are going to drain the entitlement programs and increase the national debt until it bursts. There's no doubt about it. So, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, has asked President Trump to reschedule the State of the Union speech because of the shutdown. Well, the shutdown is because of her and Schumer. So all she has to do is negotiate a deal. If you can afford to send $150 billion of our tax dollars to Iran, who threatened to wipe us off the face of the map, and and then drop $4 billion in cash at the imam's feet, then I think that the Democrats can afford to find $5 billion to protect the welfare and security of every American in the United States of America by building a wall. $5 billion is a drop in the bucket to the United States of America. This is totally ridiculous to think that the American people are buying it. So there's other agendas behind that refusal to fund $5 billion when you're sending $150 billion and $4 billion in cash to a foreign enemy nation who wants to build a nuke to wipe us out along with Israel and Europe. Hello. And then we have Nancy Pelosi, who promotes and supports illegal immigration along with Schumer and all of the Democrats, which they've done for many, many years. And the funny part about it is that a conservative activist set up a caravan, a sanctuary on Nancy Pelosi's lawn. She has a huge mansion walled in. She's all secure in her wall, behind her wall. And she's off on vacations and so forth while the government shut down partying. And so anyway, while she was on vacation, this conservative activist set up a caravan sanctuary on her lawn, and that upset her. And she called the police on the illegals who set up the sanctuary city on her property. But I thought she loved the illegals. I don't understand. If she supports them, why did she call the police on them? Shame on her. So anyway, got to have a little levity, a little laughter here and there, and put a smile on your face, because the insanity that's going on in the world is just unbelievable, boggles the mind. So what we're going to do today, and we enter into the world of authors and experts, is we're going to talk about religion, agnostics, foreign religions, and we're going to talk to an expert and an author, and his name is Robert Waller. I'm going to take a little break from the introduction. We'll enter into the world of authors and experts, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about our very special guest, Robert Waller, author of Misreading Judas, How Biblical Scholars Missed the Biggest Story of All Time, and his book won the 2018 Pinnacle Book Award for the Best Nonfiction. So stay tuned and do not touch that dial. We will be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Colombo's home on the Colombo Chronicles Live to your home, Colombo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, this is the Rose. We're back on Colombo Chronicles Live. We are about to enter into the world of authors and experts. And as you know, we have authors and experts from around the world on a myriad of topics of human interest that affect your life. And even if you have an opinion about whatever you believe, it helps to expand our minds and think about other issues that we may not have thought about. Might even change your mind, in fact. So let's get started because we have a really dynamic guest. His name, again, is Robert Waller, and he wrote the award-winning acclaimed book, Misreading Judas, How Biblical Scholars Missed the Biggest Story of All Time. The book won the 2018 Pinnacle Book Award for Best Nonfiction. In fact, he's calling into our studio from Hawaii. Beautiful, beautiful Hawaii. Aloha! Mr. Waller is a former Christian from years ago when he became a Sasanji disciple with the mystic Indian master from India in 1976. Sasanji literally means a seeker of truth. And of course, we all seek the truth. And that is one of the biggest problems we have today is communication and seeking the truth. So let's talk to our very special guest, Robert Waller, and welcome him to the world of authors and experts. Hi, Bob. How are you today?
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. We've had some rain here for a couple of days. I think we're going to have a little more. We needed it here in sunny California, and so we're happy about that. And so it's a good day to talk about religion because it's nice and warm and cozy inside. So
good. That sounds good.
Religion. And what is your profession today?
Oh, I'm in Hawaii right now to do some work on my vacation rental. I retired from farming macadamia nuts. I lived here for 15 years back in the 2000s, and it was getting warm. I think there really is global warming because 2014 was especially warm, so I decided that was enough. I'm 60 now, so I just decided to retire and move back to California with my wife, who has a big family in San Jose. So I still love it in Hawaii, and I just decided to keep a foot in the door. So I bought a house here, and I rented out vacation rentals. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, that's great because everybody likes
the
to
vacation
in Hawaii.
It's lovely here. It's wonderful. It's been warm, dry here. It's been a drought, actually.
It's probably been 20 years since I've been to Hawaii, but it was so beautiful, and I just loved all the islands.
Great.
So, tell me, why did you decide to write a book about religion?
Well, boy, I've been on a path as a seeker since I can remember, you know, even being as a little kid. I used to go climb up the trees and sing Que Sera, Sera to myself, thinking that, oh, someday I'm going to figure all this out and understand things. And my path led me into looking at the Bible. I remember very distinctly, I still used the same Bible when I was 10 years old. I got it off the shelf, looked at it, and I was very drawn to the red letter New Testament words of Christ. But I just couldn't understand what was going on with the churches. My mom would take me, you know, on Easter, like a lot of people would go, and just get our exposure to the church, and it just seemed so strange. I just couldn't relate that to what I was reading. But I just put the Bible back on the shelf and decided someday I'm going to figure all this out. And little did I know I'd be writing the book on it. It's just amazing how my life is gone. I just can't believe it.
Well, I think that's most of us. You know, mine's taken so many detours, I can't believe it either.
That
isn't where I started out or where I intended to go, but I'm everywhere else.
There's so much to learn still all the time.
There is. That's what I tell people. I say, you know what? It doesn't matter. Age is just a number. You can never stop learning because you can't live long enough to know hardly anything in reality. And life changes every single day. Yeah. And so we need to expand our minds. So I was curious. I looked up the word agnostic, and it said one who denies the existence of God. So can you explain to our audience what is the difference between an agnostic and gnostic?
Okay. Well, I would say Bart Ehrman is an agnostic, and I'm a Gnostic. That's probably the best way to illustrate it. Gnostic means knowing. Agnostic means one who does not know, because Bart Ehrman is a self-professed one that does not know which way he believes. He's not saying one way or the other. He knows a lot about the Bible, but he's not saying that he's a believer, or he was at one time, or whatever. But a Gnostic is one who's had contact with one who knows. Let's put it that way. There are masters. And this is what the talk is all about here that I'm going to be getting into. There's more than one, and there's always been more than one. There's always one in the world. That's what they say. And it's also, by the way, what whoever that name refers to in the Bible, he also taught it, but obliquely, this in no direct reference left to it, because I believe the original true Christians were the Jamesian Essenes, who wound up being hounded out of Jerusalem by the Pauline Christians led by Paul. And we're not sure who any of these writers were, including Paul. There's people that don't even believe that Paul was a real person. But I think probably most of his letters, some of his letters, the 7 or 8 primary ones, Romans, Corinthians, and whatnot, were genuine. But nobody knows who wrote any of the Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, or most of the other epistles. They're mostly written pseudonymously, written in the name of someone, but not ever betraying who they actually were. And the same is true for the Gnostic writings. Nobody knows who wrote those either, but you can compare the texts and determine which one came first and what they say and how they relate to each other. And they definitely have a relation to each other. It's not hard to see that by examining the Nag Hammadi Library collection, and especially the Apocalypses of James and Peter, where you'll see all the details for the betrayal of Christ in the 4 canonicals, but inverted in the canonicals from a mastership installation event that's chronicled in the Apocalypses. And I've got a lot of details about that I can get into later, but the way to tell which came first is clear to me, at least, when you compare the order of these things is fairly similar throughout both sources. And where it comes to the point in Mark and Matthew, I believe it does, where it says, "Hail," the original can be traced to the Apocalypse of James number 2, the second apocalypse, where it says, "Hail, brother." Now, it wouldn't have worked the other way. For one thing, Gnostics would never borrow their philosophy from a story of human sacrifice, particularly the sacrifice of their master. That would be unthinkable for a Gnostic. The Gospel of Judas is clear that they abhorred any kind of sacrifice. So to borrow from that would just be unthinkable to them. But you can tell, because the later development in orthodoxy from Pauline teaching is that there was no brothers of Christ. This was the early on teaching where Christ couldn't have brothers, so they changed "Hail, brother" to "Hail, master," so that Jesus could be free of a family and be the unique heroic God-man that they needed, because they were trying to compete with the pagan and classical Greek heroic figures that were well known at the time. So they had to one up those different sects and try to make something that was at least equal to that. And you'll see this throughout a lot of the stories. There's the parting of the waters and Exodus, and a lot of these stories get repeated from the Old Testament to the New Testament. They're always trying to aggrandize and make greater this God-man, Jesus Christ, who became the martyred Savior of the world. But the origin
you personally don't believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Is that what you're saying?
Whoever Jesus Christ refers to, I believe, was an inspired soul, a master, a savior. But I don't believe he was Jesus Christ. I think personally that Jesus Christ is a composite character put together from the lives of John the Baptist and James the Just. And there's a number of reasons I believe that. Predominantly among those is the quotations that are found by a first or second century, I forget what it is, Hegesippus, I think he's second century, very early, quotes James as saying, I will come on the clouds of heaven with power, which was given to Jesus late on in the Gospels. And also, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, was originally spoken by James and then given to Jesus. And the birth narrative of John the Baptist parallels so closely the early years of Jesus, it's hard to say, you know, hard to separate the two, as well as the death narrative, the trial, the betrayal, the trial, and the death of Christ are so parallel to the betrayal, trial, and death of James, it's almost impossible to separate those two. The first high priest, Annas, had a series. These are Caiaphas' sons-in-law, the high priest at the time, the Sanhedrin, were originally, the first one was the one that set up the kangaroo court trial that supposedly convicted Christ, right? And then there's a succession of five of them. And the fifth one, Annas ben Annas, is the one who, while he was, I guess the governor was being changed at the time in Judea, it was Felix died, and there was a new one that came, and he hadn't arrived yet. So Annas decided to arrest James and put him on trial, and it was done for blasphemy, very similar to the story of Christ. But, of course, that was illegal and all. And eventually it developed into a situation where the Orthodox followers of Paul basically attacked James. And according to the Pseudo-Clementine Recognitions, which is an apocryphal work, that's, you can find it online, it's Classics Ethereal Classics Library, it's showing that Paul actually killed James or led the mob that killed him. You don't find that in the Bible, of course, because you can't have, you know, the hero of the New Testament being a murderer even after his conversion, right? So they had to relate the story somehow and not tell it in a way that was indicting Paul. So that's how Stephen came about. They inserted the character Stephen, the prototypical Christian that Dr. Robert Eisenman has shown is a cipher for James the Just in Acts 7. So he's got many details in his work about that, and that's where you have to start before you get into what I'm doing, because I take what he did a step further, and he's having his own problems getting traction with experts, and I take it even further. So I recommend everybody to read Dr. Robert Eisenman first.
To simplify it for our audience, do you, who are Christians, do you believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross and that he was resurrected from the dead?
No, I don't. Masters don't save by their death.
What if I told you that I had a life after death experience and that I actually was taken to a place with Jesus Christ, and I was paralyzed. I was supposed to die, and that I actually, the light, who was God's voice, spoke to me, and at that moment I was told I would be healed and I would walk again, and gave me instructions on what to do, and then I was zapped back. And when I awakened, I knew I was going to walk again and healed, followed the instructions of God and the Lord Jesus Christ. And I did walk again, and I was healed, and the doctors had no reason to explain it. So they had to release me, but with my, you know, approval. And so, what if I told you that story? Would you believe it?
This happened to you?
Yes.
My goodness, that's quite a story. I would say that,
truth.
Yes, I'm sure it happened. I believe it. I believe it happened. But I think that what you have is you have an idea, a conception of Jesus Christ. Nobody has seen Jesus Christ. There's no record
well,
of
let
any
me
Jesus
explain
Christ.
That. No,
no
let me explain
of Jesus
that.
Christ.
No, let me explain that.
How do you know you
first?
Saw Jesus?
So, because I knew in my spirit, heart, body, and soul when I was wearing the white robe and he was wearing the white robe, and I knew, not physically talking to him, but mentally knew who he was. I had no
fear. Okay, there's your key right there. There's your key. Let me stop you right there. The human body is one part of the makeup of the man. The mind is the second part. The spirit is the third part. You said your mind knew that this was Jesus Christ. Your mind
my
is
body,
not your
my
ultimate soul.
Soul. My,
your spirit
my,
is beyond your mind.
My soul, spirit, whatever you want to call it, was actually aware of who he was. And I was had no fear. I knew he was total love, total light, and that I was safe.
Mm-hmm. Your mind's a powerful thing. It can cure, and it's known to do that. So that's what I would say. I think that you had
but
a mental
see, that's,
experience,
that's,
not a spiritual one.
It was a total spiritual one, and I was spiritually healed, and I'm a very spiritual person, so I actually know that it was Jesus Christ and that God the Father spoke to me, and they healed me at that moment, and the doctors had no explanation. And I
well, I'm happy. That's a wonderful story.
Soul,
I got to say.
See, that's the difference between people who are agnostic or gnostic, and people who actually have had the experiences, because they're discredited and they're told that that couldn't happen because blah 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 blah. But so I find it really interesting. I just wanted your opinion on that. But back
yeah,
to
I'm not saying
book,
it didn't happen. I just have a different way of seeing what happened. That's all.
Yeah, I understand. So in your book, Misreading Judas, How Biblical Scholars Missed the Biggest Story of All Time. So do you believe that scientists then are agnostic? Because they don't really believe there's a God either, right?
Well, not all of them, no. I don't think they're mutually exclusive at all. I'm a very scientific person, and I definitely believe. I'm definitely a believer. I'm a spiritual person who believes in God, and I'm not denying God, that's for sure. I believe I've
so
seen
how
God
did you get,
in person.
How did you get from being a Christian in the USA to going to India and becoming a disciple?
Okay. Before I became a Christian, I had exposure in Santa Cruz, California, which is, you know, it's like Berkeley. It's a kind of a crazy place. There's everything there. I almost got into Yogananda's SRF, but my girlfriend at the time, right out of high school, she and I went to the place where you get initiated into SRF, and they wanted money. So I knew that wasn't right. You shouldn't have to pay money to become, you know, a spiritual person, right? So we left, and after that, it wasn't long before she got into the local church there, an evangelical group in Santa Cruz, and she decided to ask me to come, and I decided to go, and I thought, wow, this is great. These people have a lot of life. They sing, and they're happy, and everything's great, and they got a great family here. I think I want to be a part of this. So for about 2.5 years, I became an evangelical Christian, and this is after having exposure to the spiritual side of the Eastern teachings, the meditation side. And as I was in the church, we used to live 24/7 in a brother's house and everything. I left home. We went back to Norfolk, Virginia on an outreach because there was no representation there of the local church. So I went with about 100 other people to Greensboro, Norfolk, and some other places in the Carolinas and Atlanta. I think that's where Dawn went, my girlfriend. And I just woke up one day where we usually do a 6 a.m. what we call morning watch. We do pray reading. We would pray over the words and the verses in the Bible. And that really appealed to me, but it wasn't enough. And I just decided that what I really wanted was meditation. So without telling anyone, because I knew they'd try to stop me, I just sold my car, bought a ticket, and then flew home back to California. And I left.
Wow.
I have good friends still there, and I miss them dearly, but it just wasn't for me. So I got back to California, and like your experience of being healed, I have one that's pretty similar. I was praying on the beach in Santa Cruz, Castle Beach. I remember it clearly. I just said, Lord, I don't know where to go from here. I've tried SRF. I've tried Christianity, and I'm not happy with it. So where do I turn? And for about a year, nothing happened. And then on that very same beach, I met a lady a year later who was just happening to be a disciple of an Eastern master and gave me the book Path of the Masters by Julian Johnson. So I took that back and read it, and then it referred to a book called Sarbajan by a master called Swamiji. I got a copy of that and started reading, and within three pages, I absolutely knew I had found what I was looking for. And it's my most treasured experience I've ever had. It was a while before I went to India to meet the master there, but when I finally did, it was very clear to me that I was on the right path. So there's amazing things going on in everyone's life, and you just have to try to understand.
Right.
Use your mind, use your spirit, and try to understand and explain things like what I've found with the apocalypses of James. Why are all these details of the betrayal in the apocalypse of James inverted in the New Testament betrayal? It's the same MO that Dr. Eisenman found for the Pauline blood purity observances in Qumran, reversed in the blood salvation doctrine of Paul. And he shows why the Dead Sea Scrolls Peshurim are first century Christian, not BC, like all the other experts think. He's proven that there's a connection, and that the one that's the true original is the Qumran writings of the Dead Sea Scrolls. I just took what he did about Judas. He says that the character Judas is a cipher in Acts 1 for James because of certain telltale signs, being, of course, the time where Jesus would have just died, right? And there should have been someone leading the church, right? But the first thing we hear about is a replacement for not Jesus, but the disciple Judas, who, of course, goes out and hangs himself, according to Matthew, or falls from the wall, as Luke has it in Acts. And that word that's used is falling headlong in the Pseudo-Clementine Recognitions, which I mentioned before, where Paul is indicted for being the one to kill James. That very same word is what's used by Luke in Acts 1 to describe Judas. So right away, Eisenman was connecting the two. I just took what he did and went back into, I don't know why he didn't do it, I went back into the Gospels where, of course, Judas is the prime character in the betrayal. There's many verses in all four books. And then tried to find what it might be that would connect James with Judas there. And I found it everywhere I looked. You can see all the details are present in the apocalypses of James and Peter, including the three denials of Peter in the apocalypse of Peter. But they're reversed.
Well,
they're always reversed. What's that about? What's going on?
Right. And so let me ask you this, because you do extensive research, and then you went to India and became a master.
No, I'm not a master. I'm a disciple. I'm not a master.
A disciple who was mentored by a master back in 1976.
That's right.
And
that's correct.
Meaning Satsangi, I don't know if I pronounce that right.
Satsangi.
A seeker.
Satsangi with a hard G, that's fine.
Okay, a seeker of truth. So tell me then, why, if you find this to be the true religion, I mean, that's your choice and whatever. I mean, I respect that. I have a lot of friends who've gone to India and converted. I mean, I know people that from all different, you know, we all have our own choices, which is fine. I respect
that's
people.
Of course. Well, that's why we're all here.
Yeah. And well, not everybody respects
our own. We use our own experiences and make our own way.
There's more people killed because of religion than any other,
that's,
you know,
right. That's
other,
right.
Any other reason
it.
In the world. And so
exactly.
What I was curious about is you go to India and there's so much poverty and so many people, it's overpopulated, there's hardly, from the documentaries I've seen, and so why do you think there's so much poverty and so it's so overcrowded, and, you know, poverty's horrible for any country. And so why do you think if this is the religion, then why do so many people have to live in poverty?
Well, what's your definition of poverty? The people I know there are wonderful people and very spiritual, very clean. They live healthfully, even though they have very impoverished circumstances. I don't see the connection. It's a very, very ancient culture. It's been there for many thousands of years, so there would naturally be a higher population. It's mainly a function of population. Same is true in China. But I don't know. The people there, I always feel at home when I go there just because they treat you so well. And I just,
well, I'm not talking about the people. I'm not talking about the people not being nice. I've been to their homes. They're here in America. They're very nice. But what I'm talking about is economically. A lot of people, I mean, you can see it in the documentaries where they don't have, you know, developed areas. So they're like, you know, the children and everybody's drinking clean water and living in safe houses, and it's overcrowded. And
it's crowded, sure. The cities are.
Yeah, and so
it's just a function of overpopulation, you know. I mean, what can you do? We're getting bigger too. 330 million Americans and growing still. What can you say?
Well, we're growing because of the illegal invasion that's coming to our country every third month appears. But what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, America's laws were rooted into the Bible, the Ten Commandments in the Bible. Therefore, we were declared a Christian nation. And
that's
now a lot
true.
Of people are.
That's not true. We're not a Christian nation. We're a nation that lives by the creed of separation of church and state.
Our laws and our laws are rooted.
They do have, yes, a Christian background in a lot of the institutions.
And the,
that's
and
true.
The framers were, except for two, were God-fearing, God-loving Christian men. And the one key religion was Christianity until we began to become a diverse country. And then more religions, of course, were allowed to come here and practice their religions because of freedom of religion. So what I'm trying to say is America. Country though, and we've been able
to. You dropped out there for a minute. I didn't hear what you just said.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I said, what I'm trying to say is like, America has been blessed. America has plenty of food, clean water, good housing, and so forth, and we still provide billions of dollars for other countries. So,
yes.
I guess the question is, if we're providing billions of dollars to these third world countries, why is it that they can't develop better housing and more clean water? And what is going on? That's what I don't understand.
Well, maybe they are. I see progress every time I go to India. You know, they're progressing, yes. You know, it's
yeah.
unfortunate, but there's a lot of good things going on. For example, the Dara colony where my master lives was not alive now. It's his successor there now. They built a charity hospital there, which is functioning for the whole community, not just for Satsangis, but for anyone that comes. They put up the people that have to go to the hospital, plus their families, don't charge anybody anything. And all the nurses and doctors and helpers that are there are working free of charge as a service, a seva to the master. So there's a lot of good things happening, and you know, people are getting healthier. Yeah, people are getting healthier and finding housing. And every time I get my computer service, it's done by an engineer in Mumbai. So I always chat with them a little bit and tell them I've been to the Juhu Beach. I know the place, so. It's
yeah.
great, but there's
so
a lot of very well-trained, educated Indians.
Oh, there are, and I've talked to them with computer repairs as well. Very friendly.
Sure, yeah, they're good at it. They're better than I am, that's for sure.
Me too. And so if
but
you
going
have
back
your choice,
to what you're talking, can I go back briefly to what you're talking about, how I know what how the Bible would relate to these different things and why I
see
it differently
than you. Yeah, I just
wanted
to ask you. Yeah, that's fine. But I just wanted to ask you one more question here.
Sure.
If you had your choice, would you live in India or would you live in Hawaii?
Oh, here, in Hawaii. This is home. I love the people here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is home.
And
I try
okay.
to get my wife
so,
here, but she's not ready to leave her family. So I just have to come on vacation by myself.
Well, that's nice of her to let you do that.
Yes,
so,
she does. She'll come next trip.
Oh, good. So we're talking to Robert Waller, and he won the 2018 Pinnacle Book Award for the best nonfiction book, Misreading Judas, How Biblical Scholars Misled the Biggest Story of All Time, which is very intriguing and interesting, and I'm sure our audience finds it interesting and intriguing as well. So, okay, let's get back to your question.
Well, the story that everybody's probably wondering, what's the big story that was missed? It's that the sacrifice in the Gospel of Judas is assumed by the scholars who studied it to be Jesus, just as it is in the biblical story. But the Gospel of Judas is a Gnostic story. It's not a biblical story, an Orthodox Pauline story. That's what I would say by biblical. It's a Gnostic story, and Gnostics sacrifice self. So if you read the narrative, you can look it up online, just Google Gospel of Judas. It's very short. It's only 30 short pages. And read it with that in mind, that at the climax passage where Jesus is answering the question from Judas, what will those baptized in your name do? He says a few things about what happens to those that aren't baptized in his name, and then says, but you, Judas, will exceed the others, meaning probably the other disciples, by sacrificing the man that bears me. Now, everybody from Christianity believes that, oh, that must mean Jesus' body. No, it's not. It's Judas. Judas is sacrificing himself, his lower self. It's a spiritual way of looking at it instead of a physical one. If you read the whole text that way, you'll understand why in the beginning where it says someone else will replace you, in order that the 12, and according to Lance Jennett's most recent translation, it's not disciples, it's elements. Someone else will replace you, says the author of the Gospel of Judas, in order that the 12 elements will return to their source in the Godhead, or return to their God, in a little g is what it is there. And because their God, the God of the disciples, according to the author of the Gospel of Judas, is not the true God. It's the God of the Old Testament, Yahweh. He's not the good God. He's what they call Yaldabaoth in the Gnostic reckoning. He's not the highest God. The highest God is beyond all reckoning. You can't write about him. It's not the Yahweh, the God of justice. This is a God of love that is the true God. So why didn't they say Matthias? Because there's such a close parallel to the there to the story of Matthias with someone will replace you. Why doesn't it say Matthias will replace you if that came first and the Gospel of Judas came second? It seems kind of peculiar. But if you read it with in mind that Judas is the sacrifice and not Jesus, it'll all make sense. Right after he's told by Jesus that he will sacrifice himself, the man that bears him, Jesus, okay, the me is Jesus, you will bear me, because they merge. That's what Gnostics or mystics do. They aspire to merge into their master spiritually. Right after that is a four-line ode to the master, the coming of Judas as a spiritualized person. It says, your horn will be raised, your wrath will be kindled. And it's wrath not against Jesus, it's against himself, because that comes out of the Apocalypse of James, which is the book right before the Gospel of Judas and the Codex Chagos that was discovered at Nagoya in Almenia.
We're coming to the end of the interview, and I did want to ask this question. So do you believe that there is salvation for every individual in the world?
That's a great question.
Life after death.
According to the Gnostics, and I subscribe pretty well to their teachings, they have three characterizations of the three classes of humans. The pneumatics, those that are saved, and the Hylics and the Psychics. The Psychics are the ones I believe that'll ultimately be saved, but the Hylics, H-Y-L-I-C, are those that are not destined to be saved. That's what they say. I don't know. I haven't made up my mind about that yet. And the master that I've learned from has never discussed this, really. But I think there is that possibility that there is a chance that some will never be saved. And that's just the way the creation was made, I guess. I don't know. That's a big question.
Well,
now my favorite.
Yeah, there's some pretty evil people in the world. I don't know,
I was hoping to get into a lot of these different quotations that are made in the New Testament that, are aberrations from what they should have read in the originals.
We'll have
and some
to
of
do
them,
it
like
again.
John 9:5. Yeah, there's too many to cover. I mean, obviously, we're running out of time, but there's key miswordings that. We must do the works of him who sent us while it is day. Night comes when no man can work. The us is the Codex Sinaiticus original. Christ was not exempting himself from doing work while alive. So he's telling you that you need to be alive at the same time with your master in order to be saved. So
it's all really intriguing and fascinating.
I'd love to get into it with you again if we can.
Yeah, sure, and it'll be fun and
cool.
Educational for the audience as well. And so, do you have a website or how do they get your book?
JudasWasJames.com. That's also my email address if anybody wants to reach me directly. JudasWasJames@AOL.com. JudasWasJames.
Is your book on Amazon?
Yes, it is. I have two books there. The Bible Says Saviors, Obadiah 121, and Misreading Judas. I'm on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Ex Libris is where Bible Says Saviors, and Author House is the publisher for Misreading Judas. That was Kindles for both. The Kindle for the other book, not this one, is available at Ex Libris.
Fantastic. And Robert Waller, we want to thank you so much for your information and sharing your views and insights in your book. If you want to check it out on Amazon.com or his website, or is it, did you give an email address or website?
Okay. Yeah, both. They're the same. JudasWasJames
at
AOL.com or just .com. You'll be taken right to the book site.
All right, Misreading Judas, How Biblical Scholars Missed the Biggest Story of All Time. Thank you so much, Bob, and we'll do it again.
Thanks, Rose, for the spirited discussion. I enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. Have a great day in Hawaii.
Look forward to more.
Aloha.
I am. Aloha. Thank you.
Aloha. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we were talking to Robert Waller. And again, the name of his book, if you're interested in religion, thought-provoking, and expanding your mind and comparing different religions and insights, the name of the book, again, is Misreading Judas, How Biblical Scholars Missed the Biggest Story of All Time on Amazon.com. And Waller is spelled W-A-H-L-E-R. So on that note, I want to talk a little bit about what's happening.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Let's go back to the world of politics. And we have some sad news today. 4 U.S. troops reported among 16 dead in North Syria attack. This is very, very sad. We send our condolences to the families. This is a report out of Beirut today, January 16th, 2019. A bomb attack claimed by Islamic State killed U.S. troops in northern Syria on Wednesday, weeks after President Donald Trump said a group was defeated there in Syria and he would pull out all American forces. Well, the countries are filled with suicide bombers. President Trump cannot be held responsible for generations and generations of suicide bombers that are trained from the time they can walk as toddlers. So I'm so sick and tired of the liberals posting information and blaming President Trump for things he has no control over. They were here on our soil, and they attacked us many, many, many times, and more than 3,000 Americans have been killed by suicide bombers in the United States of America. It is not President Trump's fault, but part of the fault is the Democrats who refuse to fund the wall. $5 billion is a drop in the bucket to a superpower like the United States of America. Well, Obama sent $150 billion to Iran, who intended to build a nuke and stated on national television their goal was to wipe out the USA. And he also dropped $4 billion at the feet of the imam in Iran in cash in the middle of the night without congressional notification. And he released terrorists for years and felons onto the streets, along with Governor Jerry Brown and Governor Cuomo, all Democrats. What are they doing to this country? We are having to support people who are unidentified, and ICE and sheriffs and the DOJ and intelligence for the DOJ have stated over and over again the numbers of criminals who are in our country and who are headed for our country. It seems like every 3 months now they're putting together what they call a caravan from third world nations, communist, socialist, and radical nations, a majority of males using women and children as shields so the authorities don't shoot at them, and because they're in violation with intent to storm our borders and break through our borders and force Americans to pay for their living expenses, their health care, and they are going to crash our economy. They are draining our entitlement programs and taking from the American people who pay taxes all of their lives, the elderly, the seniors, the disabled, the handicapped, the veterans, and the caregiving for the elderly, and forcing the elderly to take caregiving expenses out of their Social Security checks when that's all they get. And they're supposed to pay their rent and their food and all their necessities out of that Social Security check. And then they're being forced to pay for the illegals as well and all the radicals in our country who are declaring that they're going to start a revolution in our country. There's going to be a coup to overthrow the President of the United States, and they're going to overtake Congress. They're putting their own people in. They're going to put their own person into the White House, and too bad. And they're going to force Americans to bow down to their ideologies. When is America going to wake up? When does America come first? When do Americans come first? When do the laws get restored? All these wealthy Democrats and rhinos have walls around their house, gated armed security. They even hire armed security to protect them against us. And then they want to disarm the American people, knowing they're bringing criminals into our country. Sure, there's some disadvantaged people. There are some real refugees, some real asylum seekers who are coming to America to assimilate, but how do we know who's who if they're coming illegally, not through the ports of entry? And citizenship requires assimilation. It requires allegiance to the United States Constitution. It requires a hand on the Bible or no hand on any book then. Because when foreigners place their hand on a book of foreign ideologies and foreign laws and a religion that's bonded to their political laws and cannot be separated, they're pledging their allegiance to a foreign god and foreign ideologies, not to the United States Constitution in the house of we the people, the American people. This is a tragedy and a crisis in the United States of America when we have people going into our Congress and calling the President of the United States in front of cameras and the world an MF and declaring she will have him and her kind removed and impeached from office, calling to overthrow the President and the White House, who the American people elected fairly and duly, and who is a eligible United States president. The only person in this nation who is eligible to be a United States president is a natural-born American who is born on U.S. soil, U.S. protected soil, to two legal Americans, not to one foreign parent, not to two foreign parents, not anchor babies, but a baby born on U.S. soil to two legal Americans, period. Stop being tricked and fooled by the Democrats and foreign enemies and domestic enemies from within. Support the President of the United States. Support legal immigration that requires inspections and ports of entry. And support returning detain and release to detain and deport. God bless you. God bless America. May God keep his hand on the United States of America and protect the American people from foreign enemies and domestic enemies who do not have the best interest of the American people at heart and who are not upholding the Constitution of the United States of America or their sworn oath, which is a felony.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.